That brings me to how I got into the whole community thing when I was working with the church. We used to have a soup kitchen. And my goal or vision has always been that whoever comes to a soup kitchen, that they don't feel like they're less than a person. So they would get served like they were coming in as a paying, you know, a person at a restaurant. So I would set up the food. I would have it in chafing dishes. I would have a tablecloth covering the table. I would have napkins and plates on one end and the forks and knives on the other end. And then you would have the table for the beverages over here. But it was just a soup kitchen. But I wanted them to feel like that somebody was respecting them, that they felt like they had some type of dignity, that, you know, even though they might be down on their luck at this point, that they don't want to feel that way or be reminded.
Welcome back, Wellness Connection Podcast listeners. We have with us today Daisy Brown.
Hello.
Chef Daisy.
Yeah, Chef Daisy. And she's here visiting us to talk about her wellness journey and how she brings it to the community. Now, she's going to have me a little surprised because she hasn't shared anything with me quite yet.
No.
Not at all.
So, hi, everybody out there in podcast land. Chef is one of the hats, pun intended, that I wear.
But let me describe she's not wearing a chef hat right now.
No.
Right now she's wearing a beautiful scarf.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That is multicolored with some oranges, some yellows, and some blues. Mm-hmm. It looks like, I don't know if it's Hermes, but it looks like a design that would be with Hermes.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
that's the look of it. I don't
yes.
think,
I,
yeah.
I like that.
Yes. That's the kind of vibe that she's giving
mm-hmm.
right now.
Yeah, I mean, I love how you described that. That's perfect.
That's pretty much a part of my personality. So that's why I say chef is just one of the many things.
That's awesome.
That I have in my arsenal, but I'm into a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So yeah, mm-hmm. just born and raised in Baltimore, West Side kid.
West Side.
Sandtown, BG, I call it. So before Freddie Gray, born and raised, went to all the schools over there, any school you name it. We've lived in that area for about maybe 40, 50 years in our family. So everybody pretty much knows the family. So that's where I got my inspiration with cooking and community and outreach and church and you name it. It was all included in that area, so my stomping grounds.
But here you are over east. I met you over here.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a fight of type of way about it.
Yeah, it's a cultural shocker.
Yeah. And I like how she brings that up because it is most definitely the truth that West Side and East Side.
I was never that person. Let me just say that,
that
now.
Is,
I was
so
never that person that say, oh, West Side was better than East Side,
yeah.
and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get along, as you see, with anybody, but usually
it's just
I'm
not
passing.
Home.
Usually I just pass through East Side
right.
when I was going up West Side. And then when I got here about 3 years ago, and so, you know, I'm used to neighbors. You know, Sandtown was a neighborhood, community neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew everybody. You said, hey, what's up? You swept each other's,
okay.
you know, front and uh-huh. got trashed out the gutter together and you
really?
Met at a meeting and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got over here with my bubbly personality and I'm like, hi. And everybody's like, okay.
Well, I think one of the differences, the same probably could have been said about here, a little bit off topic,
mm-hmm.
but I think this community, this neighborhood has been going through some changes over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
So, is different,
yeah.
not just from a historically, they were probably much more the same.
Yeah.
But given the unique way that this particular neighborhood is changing,
yeah.
it's probably changed the way that people interact with each other.
Well, that's the irony, I guess, of it all is that we were the experiment for Baltimore City, Sandtown, Winchester.
Mm.
So all those developments and the new housing and Habitat for Humanity began in Sandtown, Winchester. So I saw the houses get knocked down, built up, people applying for the houses. I've had family members and friends apply for the houses. Some of them are still there. And, you know, they started out with condominiums about a block away from where I was raised and everything. And when I got here and I'm like, oh, it's getting ready to happen. And people didn't realize what was happening. I'm like, yep, it's about to go down. So I could see the changes as soon as I got here before it really took off, and saw that, you know, the different changes and the different developers and realtors were kind of like scouting out space where they could tear the down houses and things like that. So
Daisy, when you say it's about to go down, really, what did you mean by that? Can you share with us?
The fact of, I can't think of the word because I'm going to tip my tongue.
Are you looking for gentrification?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. That's why you're my word person. and growing up, we never thought about that's what that was. Mm-hmm. We just saw it just happened. So when I came over here, you know, it was like so prominent to me because I've always saw this. And so I'm like, okay. I said, well, I'm not going to go nowhere. I'm going to stay put to see what happens. So when it does start developing, when it does start to happen, then I'm already here and you can't move me anywhere. And so I'm telling neighbors and I'm like, you know, if somebody says you need to move, don't. It's going to increase your property. If you own your house, don't go nowhere. Just fix it up. Make it look like everybody else's place, because they're going to try to take it. And if they do take it and they do try to purchase it from you, the value of your home, once it's fixed up, you can actually sell it instead of having them say, okay, we're just going to give you $5,000.
So your concern was...
just displacement.
Yeah. Having that feeling of culture and family that you were talking about when you were living on the west side, was that the concern?
Yeah. I mean, we were never faced with displacement. That was the thing, which was kind of, I guess, a blessing in disguise with us, with everything that was happening, where over on east side, most people didn't have a choice. You know, it was like, you know, this is the date. You have to be out by a certain time. Thank you and have a great life. You know, we were a part of the decision making right off the bat. And again, we were such a tight knit community and neighborhood and portion of the city where you couldn't do anything unless you had our input. And if you didn't have our input, then it wasn't going to happen. And I think the education and the information that was brought over here was lacking, and people weren't thinking that they could ask about what's going on in their neighborhood. So things just happen without their knowledge. But, you know.
Well, I'm sorry.
I think that if you say you've been around here for 3 years, then I met you very early when you first got here. And one of the things that I know that you did use to try to start making connections and finding your way into space was those cupcakes.
Yeah.
So I think that if they might not say hi to you now, the first time see you, but you hit them with you hit them with one of those cupcake cakes, then you're their friend for life.
For sure.
Yeah, I think it's really the fact that you came into a new space and you were open to making those connections, and then that you sort of had a way to kind of bring, share something about yourself or something that you could do, or I think. The preparation of food for a person, for people, is a really special gift that you give. So being able to come in and present that, I think, is a very powerful thing. And you've dedicated your profession to being able to do that at a very high level. And I think that's sort of what we're going to be talking to. I don't want to turn this into a whole political thing. I was trying to bend us back.
Trying to bend us back around.
This is the Wellness Connection, not, you know, Roland Martin interviews Al Sharpton on, you dig. We can talk about that, but I know that what our intentions are here, so I want to try to keep us.
So that means I have an invitation to come back.
Yes, and that's what I was going to segue to.
We got soapboxes next door. Literally, we have soapboxes. So whenever you feel like you got something real sharp to say, I'll go get a soapbox You can at least prop
actually,
the sheet up on
actually I will probably
it.
Need that anyway because I'm so short but that's another
we
topic.
Were talking about that I don't think I hit record yet five three ish
like black-ish but yeah.
Well, they always say nice things come in small packages, so.
I thrive on that.
And we want to hear what nice things you have in your package.
Yeah, well, so I was mentioning to Karen before that I've been actually doing this whole cooking, baking thing. It'll be 11 years in September. So I am not a wet behind the ears person when it comes out blood, sweat, tears. I mean, literally blood, sweats.
Them knives, got to get them knife skills together.
Listen, I'm trying to tell you.
You got burns on your arms.
You aren't
hands.
A real chef until you have war wounds. So I earned those, you know, I have a line here and, you know, a couple of things. And
I got some burnt spots.
A couple of wounds.
I was a cook in the Army. I spent my time in the kitchen. Okay. Oh, these are all burns.
Those are called real stripes, not the ones you get on your uniform.
Look at this.
Right, exactly.
All these burns, I got them.
Exactly.
Yeah, at first I was terrified of them, but now I accept them as okay. You know, I can tell a story by this mark. And I think this one I got before I actually became professional. And in my childhood home, and I was baking something in the oven, and my arm hit the side of the oven. And, you know, growing up, and this is so ratchet, I guess. But growing up, if you ever had one of your friends or neighbors and they would get a burn, they would get the blister.
Yes.
So it was almost like street cred.
Oh, you walking around here.
It was almost like street cred because everybody would be showing off their blisters like.
Walking around here looking like Penny from Good Times. At the
Seriously.
Mama, no.
I didn't want anything to happen to us, so I was just like waiting for the bubbles to start popping up. And I was like, look.
Daisy.
I got it.
Daisy bugged out. She thugged out. She caught a hot one.
She part of the gang now.
She caught a hot one.
Like the rite of passage. Yes. You know, had no idea what I was doing, but, you know, it's still there. Reminds me of that one time my silly self not paying attention and it hit the side of that arm. And I'm like, yep. It's going to be a scar. And it is. And that was about 20 years ago, maybe.
It's like, that's going to leave a mark.
Exactly. Ta-da. Anyway. So, yeah, but, it's always been a part of my life. I just never thought I would want to make a living doing it as I grew up. My goal was to be, again, another one of the hats, was to be a computer programmer for IBM.
That's the
far on the other side of what I usually want to do, but I think I realized it when I was in the sixth grade or fifth grade, and everybody would have, you know, posters of the celebrities back then in the 80s, you know, and disco and Michael Jackson. No, I created an oil painting of the IBM logo.
Okay.
With IBM on it over top of my bed.
You are an odd child, huh?
Yes.
Very odd.
Watson?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Before Watson, it was Daisy. But I was the Radio Shack kid.
Okay.
I really was the nerd. Closet nerd.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I dibbed and dabbed in that, and I did the whole, before Apple became Apple, I did the Mac, and Mac was Tandy.
I had a Tandy.
And
computer.
I had the Tandy keyboard and connected to the TV and had my own supercomputer. And was coding and didn't know I was coding. I was just playing around.
You can't see the air quotes that we got.
Yeah, sorry.
The Tandy was not a supercomputer. Let's not get that twisted. I had one.
It was my supercomputer. You know, my imagination. We were in the hood. This is all we had. You know? You know, Radio Shack was at Mondawmin Mall.
Right.
So that was our hookup.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was the nerd into the science and technology way back when. But I think when I graduated, a few months after I graduated from high school, I got this, I don't even call it premonition or whatever, that you're supposed to teach. So I went to school and got my certification in childcare. And I did that for about 15 years. And I am officially retired. I will never go back to that.
Okay.
No. If Obama knocked on my door, I would not I would not go back to that life again. Very stressful.
Daisy.
Right. Yeah, him and Michelle. You know, they could come knocking at the door.
You were a really great child care model. And we need people like you.
Yeah. That's how it was in my head. And I was like, no, wouldn't do it again. I went from school age to infants at Kennedy Krieger to special needs, and I was the teacher, custodian, referee, social worker, nurse, divorce attorney, therapist, PT, speech pathology. So by the time I got out of Kennedy Krieger, it was pretty much my life boot camp. You know, okay. Nothing mm-hmm. surprised me anymore after that, because mm-hmm. I saw it all mm-hmm. from every, like, things you couldn't imagine, like. And I don't like blood. I don't like needles. Mm-hmm. But I had to deal with all of that mm-hmm. in the classroom.
Yes. Especially in that environment.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. And sometimes the things that we had to do, you had no choice but to do it, whether you liked it or not.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay. So that was it. That was the last call of daycare was Kennedy Krieger. That was it.
So when you were doing, when you were working in that field mm-hmm. as a provider in that context, were you using your cooking skills and stuff like that as an escape, or were you
probably,
was that just kind of in the background?
Escape. I think it was always in the back of my head as part of what I wanted to do.
Right.
But
at this point, you were just kind of self-taught and just whatever you could throw
down. I just did it at home as a, you know, personal thing to just, like you said, escape, because the stresses, you know, you come home with so much, you couldn't even sleep at night. Like mm-hmm. I was sleep deprived because of the stress and the children that we had to deal with. Mm-hmm. So my escape was in my past life, forgive me everybody, but I used to do happy hours to relieve the stress for everyone. So mm-hmm. Our location was near Security Mall off of Rolling Road. And the main one is here on Broadway Street. Mm-hmm. And so I created a happy hour for both branches. So even though I wasn't working on Broadway, they knew me on Broadway.
Right. Mm-hmm. So these were events that you organized?
Yeah, every Friday.
So you organized
it was mandatory.
So you organized a mandatory happy hour.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of the first little step in that direction, I guess.
It was a glimpse for everybody to see what I always done. Because it wasn't something that just happened overnight. So they started calling me the social butterfly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's how that started happening.
Right.
And we had, for people that might be a little older, Bennigan's was our place at Security Mall.
Bennigan. Is there Bennigan still around?
No.
No, I don't think so. I haven't.
Not at all.
Bennigan's.
Okay. It used to be like a TGI Friday. Yeah.
Right.
And all that.
So exactly. I got a Bennigan story, if I may.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I went to Bennigan's in Chicago when I did this really grand gesture to see this girl who was living in Chicago. It was a bad idea on a lot of different levels. But we went to Bennigan's and we ate there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never forget it because, okay, you know, the body does what it does.
Right.
Sometimes you need to blow your nose.
Yeah.
Sometimes that stuff happens. In my kind of way I grew up, and you kind of like, maybe if it's going to be something major, you just kind of excuse yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of
step
to the side.
She just like... She was just like,
oh no,
oh my.
See,
blue.
Yeah,
we
okay.
were sitting at the table and she was, just honking, and she just kept doing it. And I'm sitting, I'm like,
yep, check please.
But here's the thing. At this point, I've already traveled from North Carolina to Chicago see this girl.
Oh, you're going to sit in that meal.
And I'm like, okay, well, this is happening. I mean, what am I going to do? So, like, I came all the way over here to see your ill table manners.
Right, pretty much.
But yeah, that's a Bennigan. Yeah.
That's
the only thing I can remember about Bennigan's,
sort of,
like, worrying.
Bennigan's was sort of like our at least for Baltimore City residents, mm-hmm. was sort of like our five-star restaurant before everybody came down. Okay. Like everybody hung That's out at Bennigan's, everybody mm-hmm. met up at Bennigan's after mm-hmm. the school. Mm-hmm. We went to Bennigan's. You had your burgers, your fries, your chicken tender salad, and all that mm-hmm. crispy. Yeah, I was a regular.
Yeah, most five star restaurants I know offer a chicken tender salad.
Yeah. It's just another version of it. It's sort of like the boneless chicken wing.
Right.
It's chicken nuggets. But anyway, that's
so, another. So going from entertainment, from kind of being the sort of social director mm-hmm. of the people at work.
I like that.
How long did you do that before you transitioned out of that position?
Before
you even decided that you were going to do something else?
Pretty much once my last day there, which was the eighth year, I knew that I didn't want to do anything pertaining to daycare. I wanted something that didn't require a lot of thinking, so I can kind of figure out what I wanted mm-hmm. and not focus on the task.
Mm. Okay. So you wanted somewhere where you can just kind of check out.
Yeah, you know, pretty much. It's like I didn't want anything to distract me because yeah. I've been working since I was 14 years old. When mm-hmm. they say you were legally able to work, mm-hmm. that's when I started working, and I haven't stopped since.
So you wanted right. something that maybe you can use your hands, but have your mind a little freer.
Yeah,
to discover mm-hmm.
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah,
to,
yeah,
discovery.
So I did that. You know, that was the last, I believe that was the last daycare job I had. No, it wasn't. I went back.
Yeah, because if you wanted to be because if you were drawn to programming, mm-hmm. that's a thing that's where you're working with things and not people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that does give you, that is, like, it is something not to have to
well,
do
Well, which is why I had, well, I, when, you know, I woke up one day, the week after my graduation, literally that same month. And
graduation
from Frederick Douglass High School, class of 1992.
Okay. All right.
The great Frederick Douglass.
I was waiting for a fight song. Or something.
Don't get me started. All right. But
Douglass,
yes, fighting ducks. Yes, orange and blue, as you see. Always represent. and I woke up and I told my mom. I said, you know what? I need to be a teacher. I said something just well. Depending on if you're in faith or whatever, God was like, you know, you can't be a computer programmer. You're too social. You love people. If I became a computer programmer, I would be at my desk faithfully for the rest of my life doing programming. I mm-hmm. promise you. I love technology that much. Mm-hmm. Even to this day, I had to kind of separate myself mm-hmm. from being so connected mm-hmm. because I love the different things that I can do. Mm-hmm. And I love to figure things out on my own. Like, nobody never showed me. I just did it.
Yes.
You know, so exploring. I like to keep up with the things like that.
Yeah, sounds like you like to explore.
Yeah.
So let's contrast mm-hmm. this to, mm-hmm. we'll call back an earlier story from a previous episode in the podcast mm-hmm. when we were talking about Karen's point around that same time mm-hmm. in, you know, in your life when you mm-hmm. were like, well, what I want to do. And programming came up in your head too, like
really?
Yes, it
right.
Wow. It did.
Right, but you didn't have that affinity though.
Not
you
at
had
all.
No desire
it
to
took
do
a,
it.
Took a minute.
Okay.
I actually designed a program and couldn't find the comma, and that was it.
Wow. Oh, that you just gave.
Oh yeah, right. That was it.
Oh. Oh, this just doesn't. It doesn't just work.
Right. Exactly. Took me a week and a half.
Typo run you
yes.
a week and a half
really?
In the hole?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And no. I am okay. a problem solver. I okay. enjoy problem solving. However, that is not the type of problems I yeah. problem solve with.
You
so.
Definitely have to have patience and the love.
Yes.
When
for
it comes it. To do something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And, you know, that's where minds went into more people.
Yeah.
As opposed to a comma.
Mm-hmm.
So.
A little there's something a, in more a, in depth.
There's a song about commas that.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
You break out into it.
I'm going to drop it in if I can find a radio version. Oh, Karen out here messed up a comma. We're going to keep our clean rating.
Oh, my
goodness. Oh, man. Mm-mm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's another thing. A lot of my saying, I have
food-related slang.
So I'm sort of like the Jill Scott in the kitchen. Oh,
that's good. Yeah, I mean,
Everything, I'm not a swearer. Uh-huh. So I do things like, you know.
You just declare.
Mm-hmm. I just do like biscuit eater and beans and all that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You'll hear it maybe sometime.
Beans and cornbread.
Yeah, you know, all that food-related stuff. That's good for you.
Beans and cornbread. Had a fight.
So, yeah, bring us into, you know, this discovery of how did food become such a major part of how you shared yourself with people. Well, you said you like people, and I like program and organize.
You
and,
know, it's everything that I loved doing growing up to this point. Always had a connection. Mm-hmm. And I started realizing that about 5 years ago, and I'm like, oh, I did this before. Like, I've always done this before. And one day, again, growing up in the city, inner city, you're always trying to figure out how you can make money without having to have an investor, or if you didn't come up with money, you know, you had to figure out how you can do that. I hate to say side hustle. I hate to call it that. But
so investors is what you called it?
Well,
you didn't have an investor. That's an interesting way to refer to.
Well, I mean, when you were, before you had
I want to make it without an investor. That's an interesting way to call a victim on the street whose head you about to hit. Oh, that's my investor.
Well, oh, I'm going to come to
my
that.
My investor called the police
I'm
on me.
I'm going to come to that.
Because I ran them pockets.
One of my mindless jobs that I did acquire eventually was doing security work, believe it or not. I was a security guard. And my father had did it for the last, I'd say, 10 years of me being in school. So he knew people, you know, he was like the connection person. And my security job was at Legg Mason.
Security is a great thing to do if you...
Exactly.
Right.
Just like... and that was the cost.
Right, you need the free headspace, like so you just,
you know,
walking around.
And I can get paid for it.
And you can walk around and just daydream.
And I can talk to people, you know, everything that I love, again. Mm-hmm. You know, I get to meet people from different walks of life. They were different. The department had like 21, 22 floors on the Light Street building before they moved. And, you know, you had the investors, you had the real estate people, you had all these different people from different departments. And, you know, I became friends with everybody. You know, the CEOs, the president of the building, and all that. Everybody was the same to me. Mm. Hi, Daisy. How are you? So I sat there, and one of my coworkers, I believe, she got into the whole baking thing. And I said, you know, well, how do you like it? And she said, as long as you have the right tools, you can do whatever you want. And again, something clicked, and I'm like, really? So it was, the money was decent for a single person or whatever. And then I said, well, I always wanted to have my own business, no matter, I mean, since I could remember. I've always wanted to be, I didn't want to work for anybody. I wanted to be the boss. Uh-huh. Didn't know what I wanted to be the boss of, but... All I knew is I wanted to be in charge. Mm-hmm. So before cupcakes became popular, it had just started.
Wait a minute. Cupcakes have always been popular.
Okay, let's see. They were profitable.
I cannot remember a point in my life when like someone presented me with a cupcake and I wasn't happy
exactly.
to see it.
You are correct.
Okay. So let's get that straight.
So when it became profitable
and kind of in,
you
yeah.
know, the end
kind of trendy.
I think there was, it started in New York. I think it was Magnolia Bakery or Sprinkles. I'm not sure. But they were going into the whole media thing and they were getting written up in the newspapers. And I saw an article and they were like, you know, we just do this and we make different flavors. And I just looked at that and I said, no investor needed, no startup money, and all I did was take people's money with the orders that they wanted, created their cupcakes, gave it to them, extra money. And I said, well, let me try this. I don't know how to decorate a cake. Mm-hmm. Again, everything I do and have done has been self-taught.
So that money that you had left over, that's your re-up. gonna keep it gangster. We're gonna keep it G out here. That was your re-up. So next time.
Again, I'm learning what I used to do. Right. As right. I get older and right. deeper into the business, now I'm like, that's what that was. And I did that for about 2 years, and my first clients was Leg Mason. Mm-hmm. Who says, you know, at the front desk? They picked up their order at the front desk.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
And so that's how it started.
So what are you, I mean, can you share what makes, you said, I remember around this time that the cupcakes became profitable. Mm-hmm. So what makes it profitable as opposed to not being profitable?
Well, before? it was just something that people just did at home. Mm-hmm. You know, if there was a special occasion, you created a cupcake and you decorated or whatever, you tried something. But these women cornered a market into making it a full-fledged business just on cupcakes alone. And I thought that was genius. I'm like,
what I was hearing you say is that you brought a style to the cupcake. You brought you differentiated.
Yeah,
you made it a special cupcake.
Yeah, I did a after, you know, doing that for a couple of years. My uncle, going back to the sweet potato thing, I had an uncle in North Carolina, and he used to make sweet potato pies. Mm-hmm. His sweet potato pies was the only pie that I would eat. I don't care if it came from a soul food restaurant, from Miss Julie down the street or whatever. If it wasn't from Uncle Thomas, I wasn't eating it because I didn't like the texture, strings. Mm-hmm. I didn't like that. So the way he made it was more like a custard. It was smooth. It was velvet. Mm-hmm. The crust was right. It was just perfect. So when he moved to North Carolina on my birthday, he would say, you know, well, what do you want for your birthday? I said, if you just send me a sweet potato pie, that's all I want. So every year for about 5 years before he wasn't able to do any baking or whatever, he would make me a sweet potato pie for my birthday. And I would look forward to that in the mail or shipped or delivered or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, I don't make pies, not a pie maker. So I was like, well, how can I incorporate this into a cupcake?
Sweet potato cupcake. Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, sweet potato cupcake.
That's what I remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's named after him. It's called Uncle T's sweet potato cupcake.
Wow.
So I made it like the pie for with the ingredients that I could think of. Mm-hmm. But it was a secret recipe.
Did you use buttercream frosting on that? Was that a buttercream?
The first time I did. I had different variations of it.
Right. I think I had it with the buttercream.
But yeah. I do it with a cream cheese and a...
Cream cheese frosting.
But now I add bourbon.
Wow, a little style.
I'll kind of like develop different versions.
I want to make a quick comment here, too, for the listeners. Mm-hmm. I know if you've been listening for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about like a lot of healthy choices. This is our indulgence episode, all right? This is our cheat day episode.
I'm sorry.
Because we haven't said nothing healthy yet.
Sorry.
We all happy hour, sweet potatoes, sweet potato pie, sweet potato cupcake with butter and bourbon. But this is not for every day.
But it was fresh ingredients.
Uh-huh. Yes. It
was nothing fresh artificial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I made the, you know, sweet potato.
Sugar
I cooked
is natural
it.
Too.
Yeah. And it was natural sugar. See, yes. There you go. There's always that healthy aspect.
Mm-hmm. I remember tasting one of your cupcakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was an experience. Okay. It wasn't just that cupcake.
Yeah.
I mean, I've gotten to the point when we talk about healthy choices that... My question is always, is it worth the calories?
Yeah.
And that's the question I asked when I saw your cupcake.
Yeah. Yeah.
I asked someone, is it worth the calories?
Well, here's the healthy connection. I usually, when I have a customer pick up their cupcakes or I give it to them, I said, you know, if you just have one,
by the time
you walk around the block, you've burnt it off. So I always look at the healthy part of it. And I also say, you know, share it with a friend. You know, don't keep it to yourself. Mm-hmm. Share with a friend. You take the one, and then you don't have to worry about eating them every single day. So there's a way that you can do it.
And it's already portioned out. Because
exactly.
If it was a whole cake, you might just...
Oh, see, yeah. I can see that. Because I had to portion those cupcakes out. When I taste one, and it was worth the calories. So I said, yes. This just like...
But you can burn
Jared
them
said,
off, you know.
You know, that cheat day. No, yeah.
Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. All right, folks. Here we go. It is important to practice moderation and everything. Exactly. And if you're going to, this can be the motivation to eat right so that you can afford these calories. Mm-hmm. And to have a lifestyle that allows you to afford these types of
exactly.
things. And when you do it, like do it. Don't just drink a Coke, you dig? Don't right. just drink those calories.
Right.
Have it in an experience that you
mm-hmm.
can appreciate.
Yes.
Because the whatever, mm-hmm. If you're intentional about it, mm-hmm. the psychological benefit of experiencing the reward of it, mm-hmm. and if you're doing it in connection with other people, there are other things that kind of offset whatever has happened physically,
right?
With the emotional benefits
yeah.
of mm-hmm. having that type of really yeah. present experience, having something that wakes up your senses in that
and
way.
And usually, mm-hmm. you want to have it for a special occasion.
Right.
Yes.
Eat your cupcake,
you know,
mindfully.
Yeah, you
right.
know.
Right.
Mindful caking.
And
but,
I did.
yeah.
And that's the specialty that I think that allowed for it to be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was not a normal experience of
right.
eating a cupcake.
Right.
I had a really unique experience
yeah.
to the point that I still remember the taste of that cupcake.
Yeah.
And so
and
that
my job is done.
Yeah. And
you
that
know,
impacted my
yeah.
my experience. Majorly,
right?
And so we talk about
oh,
wellness.
That makes you feel so good.
Yeah, and we
I
talk about
that.
Wellness. That was a part of my wellness experience.
That's always been my goal.
Yeah,
my goal has always been, as far as my cake experience. My father, since I was about 5 years old until I was about after middle school, he used to buy this Mickey Mouse cake from one of his coworkers while he was doing security.
Because you got time.
And, yeah, you know, I'm just saying, you know, and he would buy these Mickey, it was a Mickey Mouse head, and she would decorate it, and it would have the, you know, face done and the colors and all this other kind of stuff, and it was so good. And he would get this, and I would, you know, the surprise was, every morning when I got up on my birthday, I would go to the refrigerator, because he worked at night. So I would go to the refrigerator and my cake would be there. So that was like always the thing, the tradition for maybe about 10 years or so, whatever. And I think she stopped working there after a while, but I never forgot that cake. I never forgot the way the cake tasted.
Mm-hmm.
I never forgot how it made me feel. And I was like, you know, if I could have that kind of impact, again, I didn't know I was going to do this. But I was like, if I could have that kind of impact on what I do when I grow up, that would be all the glory or credit that I would ever, like, you don't even have to remember my name. Just remember that I met this little chocolate girl.
5'2".
And she gave me a cupcake and she did this and she did that. And I would just never forget that. If I can do that, my job is done. So again, I've been doing this for 11 years. The first 5 to maybe 6 years, I used the cupcake thing as a way of just, you know, getting some income in while I was doing other things. And then I happened upon a church in the neighborhood, and I continued doing the cupcake thing. And then they were saying, you know, well, we work with John Hopkins and, you know, they may want a caterer for their meetings. And, you know, would you want to prepare something for them for their meeting that that's going to be held at the hall? And I was like, I'm not going to say no.
You so know, you're going to turn down nothing but your collar.
You know, you say, well, I'm not going to say it, but let's just say I'm not going to say no. And I started doing like cold platters, you know, sandwich trays, vegetable trays, fruit, the common basic finger food type thing.
And what were your, like, were these recipes that you had, or did you research it, or like, how did you come to?
I just put it together.
I'm
one of those people, I am a natural creative person.
Okay.
So it's like, you just plant the seed, tell me what you want, and
mm-hmm.
then I'm like, okay, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's going to be there, who I'm going to be serving. Gotcha.
Very good.
So, you know, nothing is by the book. Nothing is by copying off of somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just I'll take things that I've accumulated over the years that I've seen, but I do my own thing.
Yes.
Right. I don't like, I love being unique.
Yes.
I can't stand being, I don't copy off anybody. It's inspiration. But I won't copy. So I did a couple of trays and more on the healthy side, more like continental type items. Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to think about who your clients were.
Yeah.
That's true.
The health industry, the health makeup.
You know, it's like, you know, you go hard or go home kind of situation in that moment. Because I'm like, this could be a great connector. Let's do it really good, really big, and really nice, and nice presentation. And so I worked with them for about 2 years. And every time they had something at the church, you know, they would use my services. And I said, well, I guess I'll be doing catering now.
Right.
You know, why not add that on to, I didn't want to just do cupcakes anyway. And it was in the back of my mind to do some type of cooking or private dinner or whatever. And so this is sort of like my practicing ground, my proving ground. And so I did that with them, and, you know, they got to the point where, just give us our usual. I'm like, I've become the usual person.
You know,
I've become that person. Yes. Like, I've never been that person. Right. I was like, okay, this is pretty nice. And even up until then, I wasn't even considering myself a chef, because I felt like a chef was something that you really had to earn. And I had much respect for that position. You know, I've known people that were chefs. I've admired people that were chefs. But I'm like, no, I'm not nobody's chef. I'm just doing a business.
Right.
This is just business. And then I did a year at Stratford University. And I was talking to one of our teachers. And I said, you know, well, what makes a person a chef? And I said, you know, is it a degree? Is it going to culinary school? Is it going to Johnson & Wales? Like all these other things. And so it was always something that I thought was more of a go to school, got taught in the classroom, and all this other kind of things. And he said, no, if you've been cooking for a certain amount of years and experience, and then you happen to go to school or something like that, you know, that would make you a chef, but it doesn't necessarily have to, because about 80%, I believe, I'm not sure, of the chefs that you see in the limelight are not educated formally.
Yeah. They were apprentices.
Yeah, yes. You know, they were shadowing people. They were working in the family restaurant.
It's very much a, you know? It's very much a industry where, because I went to culinary school too. So it's very much a, you only get the chops from being in the field.
Yeah.
And being and going up through that system. So you can go to school and get it in a concentrated format.
Yeah.
But everything is going to come in the apprenticeship.
Right.
Because it's very much that type of field.
It's very much a hands-on, like being a mechanic. Like, I always compare being in the field of culinary like being a starving artist. And unfortunately, they're so similar into, if you're passionate about it, half the time you're not really making a lot of money. You're doing it because you truly love doing, like, if you could do it for free at home and just entertain yourself, you know, just what you did. But, so I couldn't bring myself to call myself a chef. I didn't even want to wear a chef jacket. I'm like, I am not worthy. With the title, like, I truly have respect for certain individuals when it comes to their industry, especially because I know the work and the things that they go through to get to where they are. And I'm like, I'm not there. And they're like, you know, yeah, you're a chef. They said, you know, if it's over 8 years experience, I believe, or something like that. I'm like, well, I've been doing a very long time before I became a professional in my field, I would say, or in my area. And then I just embraced that, you know, whether you're down here or up there, you are a chef. My mother was a chef. A lot of things that she taught me, I got the labels when I went to culinary school. And they were talking about the mother sauce and the Pur Blanc and, you know, all these gravies. And I'm like,
oh, I know how to do that.
My mother
that's just gravy. Yeah,
that's just gravy.
But they would call them sauces.
Yeah, that's just brown gravy.
My mother made it from scratch
right.
every week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it got to the point where she would let me make the gravy. Mm-hmm. And I would do it exactly like she did it. I would, you know, do the flour and the oil or the grease from the roast mm-hmm. or the grease from the
right.
chicken.
Right, au jus.
Come on. When he told me, but now listen, I'm not a fancy person to a fault, but when they started talking about a jus uh-huh. and the sauces,
right.
and I was like, that's just the juice from the roast. Like,
right, right.
He did this.
You talking about pot liquor? Oh, you mean pot liquor?
The juice from the collard greens. You know, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it got to the point where there was this sort of like unverbalized connection that I had with, of all people, my pastry chef, teacher, professor, when he would share things and he would talk about things and he would tell us directions or whatever. For whatever reason, he would always make eye contact with me. And you know how around the way, everybody, you know, when you see somebody, you don't say hi. Everybody do the head nod.
Head nod, mm-hmm. right, right.
Mm-hmm. He did the head nod to right. me
every right.
He so what does that me. Head nod mean? What is
it? It was like, I know you get
right,
it.
Right, I know.
Like, okay. like I see you understand what I'm right. talking
Very
about.
Okay.
And even though I'm trying to show these other students.
Yeah, we hear in a
you know,
way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then it pains me to try to show you how to boil water.
Right.
Basically, is what he's looking at.
Right. I know that you.
I know that
this.
You.
I know that you can already do this, but just stay with me.
Just stay with
and
me.
And I'm right. just as afraid as they are. And I'm like, stop looking at me. Like, I don't know what I'm.
Right.
I'm here to learn. And he would always, you know, so, yeah. So he would give me the head nod. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, it's like, does he know that I know? Like, what's going
right.
on?
Well, I mean, you know, game recognized game. You can tell by the way a person, like, you can tell just by the way a person picks up.
Yeah,
picks up the their knives
right.
by the
yes.
way they move around. You're
yeah.
like, okay, they
yes.
know
yeah.
they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And,
so you can recognize just sort of. The
I was surprised that he recognized that in me because it was just something that I never really
Saw
wanted
yourself.
To kind of really get into. It was just something that we just mm-hmm. did every day at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you
you
know,
didn't
I just
see it in yourself. So you was
I wasn't like... finessed about it, but I
right.
knew what the heck you wanted me to do. So
right.
I did what you told me to do. And I found my voice in the classroom, and I knew my weaknesses, I knew my strengths. And I'll say halfway through the semester, I accepted the fact that I am the female Gordon Ramsay.
Well,
yeah.
Well, that's one thing to be.
Yeah. I realized because my patience was, as you see here, I'm totally different in the kitchen. But I'm not aggressive and I'm not abrasive and I'm not cursing. But it's like, if you don't know what you're doing, please.
Yeah.
Step to the side.
Get out of the kitchen.
Yes.
Please leave side. My kitchen.
Right. Yeah, that's like it was. It's like your little heaven, your domain. It's
yeah.
your world.
But I don't
it's
mind like, sharing it. It's just that if you're not serving a purpose.
Mm.
I really can't use you.
Right, right, because it's not a game. It's not a game.
It's so not a game.
That's
so
a very good point,
I think that is just sort of like from the, so that kind of lets you know that as a teacher, that's not the area that you are a teacher.
Mm-hmm,
that's a,
right.
that's just an area where you perform.
Right.
One of the things that I noticed like in my son's,
mm-hmm.
well, I noticed in my son, Trey,
mm-hmm.
he has this really incredibly empathic ability to always calibrate. He has the ability to play together.
Okay.
So no matter how well he can do something,
mm-hmm.
if you were there, he will do it in a way that includes you. So he can be, so
yes.
if he was in the kitchen and he saw that you were struggling, he uh-huh. would kind of adjust and work with you.
Exactly.
Like, and so I know, and I think he learned that from playing video games with his younger brother. He wouldn't just crush his younger
right.
brother. He would play with him and just gradually ease
That's
him into it.
That's an extremely
so he,
good quality to have.
So he yes. has that because he has that kind of understanding.
Yeah.
in place of a competitive nature, mm-hmm. he has that.
Yeah.
And I think that there's personalities like that yes. where if you just leave him alone and play, he's highly skilled, he could do whatever, all kinds of stuff. And if you come into the space, with them, he kind of is the opposite energy yeah. of that. Mm-hmm. I think both are important, and it's important to understand, do I want to work in a kitchen mm-hmm. on a line, or do I want to be a caterer and work myself?
So that was kind of... I would never want to be in a restaurant.
Right, so that is
the... I have no admiration to work in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. If I own a restaurant, I will hire people to do my vision.
Right. Yeah, because there is... so there is that... that is something that, like, as you were talking about that, and it immediately occurred to me.
Yeah, and because I know what goes behind the journey and the process to get to the point where the food is in front of someone, I would not want to take away my positive characteristic. I will not. I would not trade my soul to be that person, because I know, just like I don't like to drive, even though I can drive, I'd rather not be that person in the kitchen, because I know that the moment somebody does something wrong, all religion is going to be out of the window. And everything that I said I would never be will evolve out of this whole female Gordon Ramsay person that, you know, I'm trying not to be. So to keep my dignity and my personality and my social skills with the community and people in general, I'd rather do things on my own.
So you operated sort of in a... It's sort of a non-traditional independent chef type situation yes. that you're working with.
Yeah.
That's an interesting model. Can you say a little bit about how that works for you now beyond the cupcake business?
So now I've formed relationships doing this for so long, thank God. And
fortunately, you didn't have to kirk out and ruin those relationships.
No. Here's a note that I always give them, and I say, you know, I hear what you're saying. You know, this is the teacher side, okay? Right. Like I said, everything that I've done in my life prepares me for what I'm doing right now because of the different things that I have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I said, so, you know, I hear what you're saying.
Right.
You would like this. You would like that. You would like this a certain way. I said, the only thing that I ask you is to give me the green light. They said, well, what do you mean? Just let me do what I do.
Right.
And everything will be fine. If I know that. I can't do it, I won't do it.
Right. And so now when you're talking to someone, who's this person you're talking to? Or is it your client?
It's usually my clients. Mm-hmm. If someone just wants me to prepare a dish, okay. It varies from individual to a group. Mm-hmm. But I give them the same spiel all the way, because it's like I can execute better if I have the creative
freedom to understand. I'll let you know that I understand what you want.
Yes.
And then give me the space to.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So just let me do my thing. If I feel like that I cannot execute this, I'll say I can't do that.
So what are some of the things that are required for you to get mm-hmm. from that client to design this magnificent?
Just tell me what you like.
Okay. So
you're generals. Paying for it.
Yeah, right. Just general.
I'm not working for the guests.
Right.
I just want to satisfy the guests.
Right.
But I'm working for you. So the money is coming from you. So whatever I'm going to purchase and prepare is coming from the funds.
Right. And their vision.
Their vision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if, you know, just like you go to any other party, you don't know what they're going to be serving.
Right.
But you're just honored and thankful that somebody thought something special of you to mm-hmm. invite you to that place. Mm-hmm. So if there's something that you don't like, what you usually do? You go on to the next thing, right? Mm-hmm. If it's something that you don't care for, or you're allergic to, you just move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. So I said,
puff up.
Yeah. And if you're not coughing up,
you might puff up.
You might want to shut up. But okay. I was like, that's the Gordon. Anyway. But yeah, usually I go around the event. I base things around the individual. I base things around the venue. And I put all of those things together, even though I'm just preparing the food, all of that goes into play in what I'm going to serve and how I'm going to serve. Because, like I said, I'm a creative.
Right.
I love everything creative, using my mind. I have a huge imagination. So anytime I get a chance to use it, I'm like, so tell me, what's your favorite color? What's your favorite this? Some kind of way it's going to be incorporated in the food or incorporated in the way it's displayed. Because like you said, to bring back to the something that you mentioned earlier, when you had the cupcake, it was an experience. So my thing is that even though this is the only platform that I'm using, you're going to be the host. But my, you know, way of expressing myself is through the food. So when I put it out there, I want you to get the experience. It's not just going to be, oh, we're just going to put this on a platter. No, I'm going to decorate it. I'm going to garnish it. Again, for my mother, she did this with her potato salad. She would take parts of the green pepper and cut it up, look like a little spade thing, and put it on top of the potato salad, put the paprika to give it some color. She would add mustard to give it the yellow. You know, all of these things I'm just remembering while I'm doing this. And I'm like, well, I can always take that a step further because, you know, I'm just extra.
Right.
So
we had this one experience where there was this one dining facility in Germany when I was in the Army that always won the awards for, like, best in the Army or whatever. And I had the opportunity to work in that facility while I was at a training exercise. And they served hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people coming through the chow line, getting the food every, you know, getting their meals. They garnished every plate as it came. Like when you, like, so every person's got a plate. You know, because you, when you're thinking about eating at a quote-unquote chow hall, you're thinking they're just slopping some food. You got a garnished, well-presented, well-prepared plate. Everybody was special. Like
that
every
was nice.
And that brings me to how I got into the whole community thing when I was working with the church. I started out, they were saying that they used at that time, they used to have a soup kitchen. And my goal or vision has always been that whoever comes to a soup kitchen, that they don't feel like they're less than a person. So they would get served like they were coming in as a paying, you know, person at a restaurant. So I would set up the food. I would have it in chafing dishes. I would have a tablecloth covering the table. I would have napkins and plates on one end and the forks and knives on the other end. And then you would have the table for the beverages over here. But it was just a soup kitchen. But I wanted them to feel like that somebody was respecting them, that they felt like they had some type of dignity, that, you know, even though they might be down on their luck at this point, that they don't want to feel that way or be reminded.
Right.
That, oh my God, you know, I am in a soup kitchen. This is where everything goes down, and this is the end of the road for me. I'm never going to be anything. And so I would serve them, and I would say, I would go around to the different tables once they sat down. Everything okay? Did you need anything else? Would you like some more water? You know, never worked in a restaurant, but I just wanted them to feel from what I've experienced as a guest or as a patron at a restaurant, that I wanted them to have that experience. Even if it was for that one day, that one moment, they will feel like they actually had a chance to experience, even if they never had it before.
That's amazing.
So it's like, why not respect? You're human, I'm human, I bleed, you bleed. Why can't you have the same experience? Why is it that no one can give you that hospitality that if somebody walked into the Four Seasons right now didn't have? Because you don't have a job or you have an addiction.
Right.
You know, sometimes that one little act can change somebody's mindset.
Absolutely.
Instantly.
Absolutely. Yep. The experience.
Instantly.
Exactly.
Yeah, when you're eating, you're not just eating food. There's a whole experience around it.
It's a whole experience.
And there's a whole story that you are telling yourself while you do it.
Yes.
So creating that experience for people is a very powerful.
And you can see it in their faces. And they're like, oh my God, like, you see me?
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly.
You see me?
Yes.
Like, you want to talk to me?
Right, and I deserve to be treated with dignity. I deserve to be
You know? I mean, till this day, I have people, when I walk down Monument Street, they're like, hey, chef, you know, I got street cred. Yeah.
Right. But that's how you impact the community. But I got street
cred. Like, they might not remember my name, but it's like, I haven't seen you here. Or when you going to make the next, so what's on the menu today? And it's a whole nother conversation, not about the blue cap, red cap,
yes,
this bag, that bag, or whatever. It's all about food. The common denominator is nurture. Mm-hmm. The common denominator is eating. The common denominator is food. Now, how you go about to get that, that's a different story.
And
but
purpose.
We all have to have that to survive. Mm-hmm.
And purpose. You know? You brought purpose. What I heard you, mm-hmm. you brought purpose to the table as well.
Yeah.
My purpose is to engage you.
Yes.
To break a piece of quality into your life.
Mm-hmm.
Although you may not be seeing that quality at this moment, but right. let me paint that picture for you because exactly. it exists.
And that you deserve it.
Yes, and that you deserve it.
So how long have you been working with the in the soup kitchen or with the soup kitchen?
I did it up until probably just before the holidays last year for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I acquired an injury, non-cooking related, that set me down for about 3 weeks, almost a month, where I just had to just rest. And usually when you're in that kind of state, all you're doing is just thinking, like, okay, I got to do something because I don't like to stay still and I don't like to be home. And
could have wrote one of those 2-3 books you're trying to write.
I could have, but there are certain situations where I'm a huge procrastinator.
Okay.
So all somebody right, like to find. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
But so I was kind of like going over again everything that I did in my life up to present day. And you know, I was the social butterfly, I was a teacher, I was a security guard. I, you know, connected with my neighbors in the community. I grew up in the community. I grew up in church. So I was like, well, what can I do to bring all of those things together? Where, you know, a lot of people say, you know, you need to stay in your lane. You're doing too many things. But I do a lot of things and I do them well. You know, it's not just one thing. And why should I keep that to myself? It's called a gift for a reason. Mm-hmm. So instead of sitting on that and being worried about people saying, you know, you should stick to cooking, you should stick to this. Why? Says who? Who are you in charge of? You know, and so I was telling Karen that I'm in this transition stage where I want to do something along the lines of lifestyle and lifestyle blogging and branding myself as a brand.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like the Black Martha Stewart. But a little bit on a next level.
There's a lot there.
There's a lot there, you know.
There's a lot of iterations of Martha Stewart.
Yes. And growing up, I was Martha Stewart. Mm-hmm. I literally was. I was cooking.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's making money, too.
No, that's her catchphrase, and that's a good thing.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I should know that. Oh, my gosh.
I'm trying to.
I was so busy carving my own lane that I forgot about that, you know.
Stopped him along. I was trying to.
But, you know, she, you know, growing up watching her, she did all of the things. She did the cooking. She did the stitching. She did the entertaining guests at her home or at somebody else's home. She did the, I think she worked on a car at one point. To change a tire, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I mean, you know.
She did the gardening. She did the decoupage thing. You know, she did all these different nuances that made her who she was. And I'm like, well, why can't I do that? And then B. Smith came along. Oh, my God. I thought an angel had descended on TV. And I was like, she got the same complexion. And she's doing what I've always wanted to do very well, very professional, very well spoken. And she presented herself as just this, you know, person that was a professional or expert in whatever area. And if she didn't know it, she would have someone show it to her.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, so this actually can be done. But I haven't seen anybody else that I know of do the same thing that these two women did. They have variations, but it's not consistent. So my idea is just to take that to the next level, but make it more relatable and accessible to our community. So whether you're just scraping by paycheck to paycheck to the person that has an income coming on a regular basis, you can relate to what I'm presenting to you. I was that child that we had no money, and, you know, a diamond doorknob, a crystal doorknob was like gold, you know, like the Jeffersons, if you ever saw that episode, when I think it was Weezy, and they went back to her childhood home. They had moved on up.
I'll find it.
You'll know it.
I'll drop it.
After they moved on up to the east. No, after they moved on up to the east side.
Moving on up
to the east side, they went back to her childhood home back in the old neighborhood. And the one thing that she saw that she remembered that just made her feel like they were rich was this crystal diamond looking doorknob. And before they left, I don't know if it was the last episode or not, but before they left, she untwisted the knob.
She
put it in her purse to remind her where she came from. Wow. And that everything that she had dreamt about was from that doorknob. Wow. And she took it with her back to the east side.
Wow, I love it. This is very similar to what you've been describing as your story.
Yeah.
And how you had to reposition yourself from the west side to the east side and go through the changes in the community, and yet trying to discover yourself as a person and also add value to the community and something that you're passionate about and bring in richness and purpose and value to everyone.
Yeah.
Very good.
So what do you want to leave us with?
I agree with you. So describe three wishes, because you said you're a visionary and you have more you want to give to the community. So what are those three wishes that you can share with the community today that you bring, you plan on bringing to the community?
One is to be an example, an active example of what it is that I want to see.
Not like somebody that got made an example of.
Right.
But like a positive, let's qualify it. A positive example.
You know.
Aspirational example.
Yes.
What to be, not what not to be.
Yeah. I moved into a neighborhood near Hopkins, and it's predominantly Hopkins doctors and nurses and all those that work there. And they're very prominent people, not of our persuasion for the most part. And again, as I've done all my life, I'm always that one ink spot that's amongst that group. And after they've gotten to know me, you know, they know different versions of me. And I'm, you know, I'm not the only one. I'm just one of 10 other, hundreds of other people that has the same thing. But I just want you to see that we do exist. You know, we do exist. We've always existed, but, you know, you're just getting more exposure than we are.
Okay. So
to be just exposing our layers, if you will.
And being a positive example.
A positive example.
And actually an exemplar.
Exemplary.
Okay.
The other thing would be to just do something where, if you don't have a lot of money, to inform of reform people that even though where you are, you can make it better if you wanted to. I did it growing up, and I think that helped me survive in life was to create something that I didn't have or wasn't exposed to. So it would be to just make things accessible to the general community, to Baltimore City.
I think a big part of that is valuing experiences over things.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't necessarily take a lot of money to improve the experience that you have with an everyday activity, whether it be having a meal or just the way when you come home, what it's like when you were sitting in your space. That doesn't necessarily take anything other than valuing yourself enough to allow yourself to have that.
Right.
And sometimes they need to see, people need to experience it, have it modeled.
Right, exactly.
And then see how it feels, and then like, well, you know, this could be my life. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's just like when it comes to food, you eat with your eyes. Everything is visual.
Yes, because
you know, and you know, 9 times out of 10, if it looks like stop, you are not going to eat that meal. You're like, no, next. But that would be one of the things. The other thing would be to just make more of a purpose for Baltimore than what it is and what I grew up to see it as. I want it to be more of a shining example like we used to be when we were Charm City Reads, the city that reads. It was a whole couple of other different kind of slogans that they had some years ago with different mayors, and Schmoke was mayor and things like that. And I just kind of want us to be the city that defied the odds, because it is possible. Mm-hmm. You just have to believe it and just do it.
Is that wished through your cooking, through your presentations? Through
all of it. Okay. It's like not one is more than the other. It's just showing that, and they tell me, well, where did you get this? Or where did you? And I tell, I did it myself.
Right.
Well, where did you get?
This is Baltimore, baby. This is,
you know,
Baltimore.
This is what we do. You know, this is where celebrities come to hang without being noticed. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Baltimore has a long history with celebrities, but that's another topic again. Mm-hmm.
Right. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you,
thank
Daisy
you.
Brown, for coming to sit with us and join us here at the Wellness Connection and share how you bring quality living to everyday life.
Thank you.
How do people connect with you?
You can reach me on Instagram. I'm an Instagram person. So I'm at One Chef D Brown. I have to remember. It's my handle on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook. And you can see me there at Facebook as Oh Wonderful Cupcakes is my business page. And also, if you would like to contact me via email, I can be reached at owc.team@gmail.com for inquiries or any information that you may have.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. We're going to get all that. We'll put those in the links to all those in the show notes. Sounds great.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Wellness Connection podcast is brought to you by Hail Wellness, a social and interactive platform where we connect our community to local businesses, organizations, and individuals who have tools, services, and programs that nurture the mind, body, and spirit. Engage in awareness by taking our free wellness assessment and take first steps towards optimizing your wellness. Visit wellnessconnection.com. Health.